Mr. Edwards, Reel 5. Now, the next thing was the move to Gosport, which was a sort of camp before you left, wasn't it? Do you remember that?
Yes, well, about four or five or six days after D-Day, we moved. We moved about 4 o'clock in the morning, and we drove through small towns and villages early morning. I mean, you can imagine what a noise a column of tanks would make going through a village, for instance. And people were waving to us from the bedroom windows. It must have woken them up, and they were waving to us as if we were going off to battle, I suppose. They'd probably seen others pass that way before. And we thought, oh, we're going to battle anyway. We finished up at a transit camp. A bit disappointing. We moved us into this transit camp, and we were in bell tents. And we were there for 2 or 3 days, and it rained hard part of the time, and there was nothing to do, and we just go to the mess hall, and the mess hall was just go to the mess hall and come back to your tent. That's all you could do. Anyway,
we locked in, or I mean, not locked in, but
you couldn't move out of the camp. No, you couldn't move out of the camp, and in fact, there was nothing you could do. But after a few days, which was came to about the 13th of June, we moved in the evening into a street in Gosport, and we lined the tanks up in this street, and we were told we'd be there for some time. So we asked the people, can we sleep in the houses, can we sleep on your front lawn? And they said, oh yes. So we put the ground sheet on the front lawn, and we all slept on the front lawns all the way up the street. 2 o'clock in the morning, they woke us up, and we started the tanks up. So all the tanks in the street started up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and moved slowly to this slipway, and loaded one at a time onto the tank landing craft. It was all dark, except the inside the landing craft was lit up, so you could see where to drive into the landing craft. And in the landing craft, I think we got either 10 or a dozen tanks in the landing craft. We didn't get a whole squadron in, we got probably a dozen in, and they had to be put in position and then fastened down with chains, and we had tensioners on, so they were all firmly clamped down to the deck. And then we had to go into a room, or a cabin, a large cabin, just bare steel with a few wire bunks on, and we had to stay there. We weren't allowed out until they were out at sea, and it took a long time to get out to sea, and the diesel fumes were shocking. You were suffocating with diesel fumes when you weren't allowed out of this making room. Anyway, it took a long time to get out at Gosport. It's a long, I mean, I've seen it in daylight since. You go a long way all the way across the front of South Sea, and then to avoid the sandbanks, I suppose, and then out to sea. So it takes a long time to get out to sea. But anyway, once out to sea, they let us get out on deck, and it was a fine sunny day and nice day.
And this would be when, about 15th, 16th? Do you know the date?
Well, I think it was the 14th. 14th of June, my memory. And we sailed over slowly, and there was just six of us, and I thought we might be in a convoy with an escort, but there was no sign of an escort, just six landing ship tanks going across. Yeah.
And were you seasick?
No, it's calm. It's calm day, and no bother. And we got over to the other side around about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening. Amazing sight. There's just ships all the way that way, you could see, and ships all the way in the other direction, you could see. Ships of all sorts, warships, battleships, cruisers, landing ships, merchant ships, patrol ships, landing, all sorts of, just hundreds of ships. You'd never see so many ships all at once at any other time, I don't suppose. And the landing ship grounded on the beach. They all grounded on the beach. And then we just sat there and waited for the tide to go out. And when it had gone out to about, so just about 2 feet left, we drove the tanks off.
And where exactly were you landing? Do you know the name?
No. I think it probably tells us in one of the books, but I don't know. I don't know where it was.
We can write that in, yeah.
And
what was happening on the beach when you were going on the beach?
Nothing. It was pretty quiet. And we just drove off and drove to a field where we took all the waterproofing gear off. Didn't blast it off like they're supposed to do. We took it off quietly and put it and piled it up on this in this field,
You hadn't really needed it from the sound of it.
No, we hadn't. But you see, everybody had to be ready to... He didn't know what the situation would be. But we hadn't needed it. And we drove... By the time we'd got all this gear off, it was dark. And we drove some distance in the dark and stopped. And then the next morning, we drove to and harboured on the edge of a path, on the edge of a track alongside the hedge on the lane. And on the way... In the morning, we passed two knocked-out tanks belonging to the 8th Armour Brigade. And
how do you feel about that?
We were harboured at this place for some time then.
Is this Cully?
Well, it could be. Yeah.
Because so you were just outside Cully. Yeah, they reckon from halfway through June
till the 25th.
Yes, 26th of June.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
for about 10 days, would that be right?
That would be Cully then.
Now, can I just ask some? Because that's a good place to ask some general questions.
Could I just say that while we were there, we went back in twos and threes to look at these knocked out tanks. Well, I just went to the nearest of them, and they didn't encourage us very much because they had a hole through. We'd had extra plates welded on the side to cover the ammunition bins, and there was a hole through one of the extra plates, and the tank was just a shell. It had completely burnt out.
And they were Sherman?
A Sherman. Completely Sherman.
With the crew in there? Or
there was a grave at the side with a piece of wood stuck in, and somebody had penciled a note on the piece of wood. Four, possibly five. So I thought, well, the crew must have been all in bits. So as I say, it wasn't very encouraging. We thought, oh, good God, things are worse than we thought.
Now, I just want to ask some general questions because it's a good time to ask it before you get in the action, in a way, because you were there about 10 days.
Yeah.
How did you camouflage your positions, if you did?
Oh, we just had a camouflage net on the tank, but as you imagine, anybody flying over would have been able to find them.
What was the net? Did they have bits of stuff on or painted or?
Well, it was greenish cotton net with bits of I don't know what you call it, bits of bits of scrim on, bits of green and brown scrim on it.
You didn't put branches and stuff on it, then?
No, not in this case. We didn't bother.
And what about your bivouac? Did you use this method of? You mentioned earlier, but I left it there. But did you have this business of having it at the back of the tent?
Well, we had two tank sheets, you see, and one was a flat one which we could use as a. The tank sheets were covering the tank when you were in a camp or barracks to keep the rain out. But when we're out of camp, the flat one you used as a ground sheet, and the other sheet was shaped so that it made a tent, and you could fasten one end to the tank, and the two flaps came down, and it was sort of a tent.
And you didn't dig in, though?
Well, in this case, we didn't do to start with, but then later on, after we'd been there a day or two, we did dig a hole and put it, we had the tent over the hole.
Did you know not to go under the tank? Or sleep under the tank, anyway? Because they might sink. Did you know that at that stage?
I can't remember. But in fact, we did later on, but with a hole under it.
Yeah, sorry, you have to dig a hole.
We didn't sleep under the tank, but whether we knew about it, I don't know, but I wouldn't have fancied it anyway, just to sleep under the tank.
And what about the food you got there? Were you getting compo by rations?
We got compo rations. They came in a box, a 14-man pack it was called, and it lasted a tank crew three days.
And what exactly did you get, and what did you think of it? Who cooked it?
Well, any of us cooked it, because it was just a matter of warming up tins. Some of it was McConaughey's stew. Some of it was stewed steak. The potatoes were diced potatoes in a tin. You just warm them up. There was cheese in a tin that you had to open the tin and dig the cheese out. We had hardtack biscuits to eat with cheese. There was some bars of chocolate in there in the tin. The tea was compo tea, sugar and milk mixed up as a powder, and you just stirred it up with hot water and you got a reasonable cup of tea out of it. Breakfast were a bit off because Sometimes it was a tin sausage. Well, it was just sausage meat, and it was marked so you could cut it into sections. You didn't get a lot out of it. And the bacon, in some packs had tin bacon, and in our packs, the bacon was horrible. You opened it up and it came out like a tin of worms. It was all greasy, all greasy rinds and that. And I thought that the bacon was very poor. We once had a tin of American bacon, and it was just like proper bacon. It was great. But the tin bacon we had was rather poor. And we just had hardtack for a week or two, and then they started issuing some bread, so we, most of the time in Normandy, we got some bread.
Did you get food from your cooks as well, or did they do a meal for you, or were they doing anything at Cully? Or?
Well, the cooks would be in, probably serving the truck drivers, I don't know, but the tanks, we were separated from the trucks, and we were doing our own.
Now, what about cigarette ration? Did you get it? Did you smoke?
And
did
at
you
the get time, I didn't smoke, but they did get in these compo packs. There was a tin of cigarettes, as I remember. How many there were, I don't know, because I wasn't interested. You see, so
would you swap yours or just give them away?
Well, I didn't. You didn't have them as yours, or there was a tin. There were cigarettes in the box, and whoever smoked had them.
So you didn't share them out to the.
In our crew, I can only remember Clifford Pembroke being a smoker. I can't remember anybody else smoking.
That's quite unusual in England, because most people smoked.
A lot of people smoke, but that's my memory anyway. Pat Kettridge, I'm certain he didn't smoke. No, I never saw Corporal McCatty with a cigarette. I never saw Ron Ford with a cigarette, come to that. I don't know if he smoked or not, but I can't remember.
And what about rum ration? Do you get a rum ration?
No, not in Normandy. I never had a rum ration.
Latrines, what were they like?
Well, while we were there, we just had a... Farther up the path, there was a trench dug, and you just squatted over the trench. Very, very public it was, but fortunately nobody came past except soldiers.
Not something you worried about by then?
No.
Were there any French civilians round and about? Or the village was quite near, wasn't it?
Well, all I saw was a bit of a village about a quarter of a mile away, and two or three of us had a walk round, and there were a few children there. We gave them bars of chocolate, and we didn't see an adult at all. Once a door, it was this bit of village I saw was a very poor, poverty-stricken looking place, and as we passed, one of the doors opened and a face looked at us through the door, and that was all. I think they were suspicious of us. I believe some of the Normans weren't very happy about us being there.
Was there any German shell fire or air activity at all?
Where we were, no, there was nothing coming in. We once saw an American bomber shot down, and the pilots, the crew bailed out, and they landed some distance away. We didn't see where they landed, but they landed like about half a mile away from us. And in the night, there used to be a firework display over the beach, because the bombers used to go and have a go at the ships.
The German bombers?
Yeah, the German bombers. And every ship that was parked near the beach was firing. There was a real firework display, so I imagine the bombers wouldn't like it very much.
Did you know about that you had to be careful about leaving tracks and things?
Well, it didn't bother us at the time. We were stationary, and that didn't come into it for us. Not then.
You weren't there that long. You were there about 10 days, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the first big operation, they called Operation Epsom.
Epsom, yeah.
And this was basically the attack on a village called Sher. To cross the Oder and onto the Orne.
Yeah.
Could you tell us exactly what happened as far as you remember it in the first day? I know it's probably not possible to go through it day by day. There was about 3 days of it. But what do you remember of it?
Well, I can remember the start of it. The squadron moved up a track, and the infantry were doing the main work. The Spitting Scottish Division were doing the main attack with tank support, of course. But one of their men came back down this track with a prisoner of war, and the prisoner of war had his hands in the air. He was a real fanatic looking type, and I looked at him through the periscope, and his eyes the look in his eyes, I thought, good God, it's just as if it was coming straight through the tank at me, even though I thought, good God, it won't be not all like them up there. Anyway, he's a real fanatic looking type. But then we moved up this track and we lined up on what was supposed to be our start line. And we were the right hand tank of the line. And just to the right of us, there was an anti tank gun, an M10. 17 pounder, banging away way over to our right at two German tanks that we could see moving across in front of a wood. They were banging away at one, and so Makati swung, had a traverse round and had Pat firing at the other, and he fired about three rounds to get the range, and then he hit it with the fourth one, and it didn't brew. We said, oh, it stopped, but you said, oh, it stopped. And we got the order from the two commanders, cease fire and get moving, because everybody was moving off. So we had to move off with them. So we moved off.
Do you know what sort of tank it was? I mean, were you expert enough even then to say whether it's a Mark IV or a Panther or a tank?
Well, I reckon they were Mark IV, but they were a long way off, and I couldn't have been.
What when you say a long way off, what range were you talking about, roughly?
I thought about 3/4 of a mile. I thought, oh, 1,200 yards or so. And they were moving against a dark background, so they weren't all that easy to spot.
Now, B squadron, you were the right hand tank, but they were in front. They were the lead squadron, I believe, in that attack on the first day. Yeah. Do you remember that?
That's not how I remember it.
How do you remember it then?
Well, to start with, we were driving with the driver with his hatch down, so he was closed down and he couldn't see very well, and we ran into a big hole. And then we couldn't get out of this big hole, so Mac Hattie had to get out, and he wandered over, and there was two Churchill tanks nearby. Must have been the HQ of one of the Churchill tank regiments, which was supporting the infantry, and he got one to back up and give us a tow out. So when we got out, the squadron had all disappeared on the other side of Shire. So while we were waiting, I got reports then from A squadron, they got two tanks knocked out, and they said, oh, two have got out of one or three out of the other, and that's when you know you're sort of in the war. When the tanks start getting knocked out, you know even blokes are getting killed. And also C squadron were getting tanks knocked out.
How did that affect you? It does make it much more real, doesn't it?
Oh yes, it affects you a lot, and it sort of, I can only say fear. A fear of you know that things are happening now. Anyway, we had to ask the squadron for the position, so because we didn't know where they were then. And we got the position and in code, and then I worked it out for Mac, and he looked at it, and he said, would you check it? So I asked again for the position, and they gave me the same position, and I worked it out in code just to be on the safe side, and I still got the same position, and I showed him where it was, and it was in an orchard to the south of Shire. So I said, all right. So it was like half a mile of open ground to Shire, so we were toddling across it on our own, nobody else in sight. And we got into Shire, a lot of battered, oh, we passed some dead infantry just outside Shire. We thought, oh, that looks great. A lot of our dead infantry lying about just in front of Shire. We went into Shire.
Were you coming under fire at all?
No. We went along the main street of Shire, and there was a church. He said, machine gun the church, Browning the church. So Pat fired all of a sudden Browning at the top of the church in case there was a sniper up there. Then we turned left and made our way towards this orchard where the squadron was. And we got in the amongst the squadron, and as soon as we just arrived amongst the squadron, trying to find our troop, and there was an explosion in a tree above us, and Mac dropped to the bottom of the turret. It was a heavy man, and he dropped right to the bottom of the turret. Oh, my head! And his chin hat had fallen off. He got a hole in his chin hat. I could put my fist through like that. He got a nasty wound on his head anyway. Pat got his dressing out, and I had to wriggle under the gun, and I helped Pat to bandage his head with this dressing.
Now, what had caused that? What was that, a mortar fire? Or?
Well, we don't know. It was just an explosion in the tree, whether it was a mortar. Or at the time, we thought, oh, it's an S-mine, because they put these S-mines in trees with a tripwire so that a tank would hit it and explode it. So whether it was an S-mine or a mortar, we didn't know. It was a hell of a bang. When we got him bandaged up, and he got all blood all over his face and hands, and all I had was cotton waste, so I sort of rubbed him down a bit with cotton waste, and we helped him out of the tank then, and he could just about walk, and pointed him towards the village, and I said, oh, best of luck, keep going. So he then headed back to the village, and we got back in the tank, and Pat became the commander, and I became the gunner. And Cliff Pember, the co-driver, came in to be the loader. And we didn't do anything then except sit there with the squadron, because the infantry had dug in somewhere in front of us.
So you were covered?
For the night, nothing was happening, if you get me. They were dug in front of us. Nothing happened where we were. And then, as it went dark, we moved back some into a wheat field and leaguered for the night in the wheat field. And it rained.
Now, that's the first lager you were really into. What would happen in a lager? What were you going back there for? What was the reason you did it for a start?
Well, the reason was in case you got attacked in the night, because the tanks were a bit helpless at night, because you couldn't see that well. And we'd form two lines of tanks. And the idea was if you got attacked, if you couldn't do anything else, you could move forward and drive out of it, you see.
The thing is, I believe that's where you get more. You meet the B echelon or the advanced B echelon.
Well, sometimes the A echelon trucks would come and join you. Would come and join you in the Liga, but they didn't do that night.
So that night you didn't get ammunition or fuel or anything.
We didn't get anything.
I'll deal with that another time then. So what happened that night? Did you manage to get any sleep, or were you nervous?
I think we slept a bit. You had to have somebody in the turret on the lookout, and I don't think we had the radio on, but I can't remember. We sat inside the tank and had a bit of something to eat. I don't remember. I reckon we probably slept, but I can't remember for sure.
And what happened next day?
Next day we woke up. And a lot of the infantry were near us, dug in trenches. And when I looked, they were climbing out of the trenches. It was all muddy in this wheat field. They were climbing out of the trenches and getting and moving off. And I remember they all had the pickaxes or spades down the back of the packs, and they were sort of clanking against the tin axes as they set up. Heading south.
Were they under fire or...?
Not at the time, no. They were later on. No, all we did was... The village was under attack, as it happened. The village behind us was under attack.
Do you know which village that was? That was still Sher.
Sure, it was under attack. The Germans were counter-attacking in at one end, and they got in at one end. So we moved back into the village, and we were just lined up at one end of the village all the morning, really. Didn't do anything, but I suppose we had to stay there in case things got worse. But then in the afternoon, the whole regiment advanced southwards towards a place called Granville. And we stopped on the outskirts of Granville.
Anything happened during the advance, or was it...?
Well, I think Captain Marsh's tank knocked out a panther, whether it was just then or not. It was sometime that day they knocked out a panther. I did a bit of machine gunning, because Pat said machine gun that wood over there, which I did. The recce troop went into Granville, and they got chased out. There's some panthers there, and they got chased out of in their little tanks. And I know the colonel asked the recce troop for his position, and the recce troop bloke said physician bit buggered, wait out. And that's all I remember him saying. But what a time to ask him. He was with chest out. He was running for their life, like out of with shots coming up the back end. Because one of the chaps in the recce too was Norman Crampton. He says we were like this in the tank. We were waiting for the shelter to come up our back end. They only had the little Stuart tanks. I don't remember much about that because we didn't go into Granville, at least our squadron didn't, because there was an attack coming in. They must have cleared Sher, but to the west side of Sher there was an attack coming in, and they sent us back. We filled up with petrol and then we went over to meet the enemy on the west side of Sher. And by the time we met them, it was going dark. And there was a lot of shooting then, because we sort of came upon them all of a sudden, and we started shooting, and they started shooting, and we backed up against a hedge. And nobody got hit. I think they went to ground when they saw us, they went to ground, same as we did. But there was a lot of shooting going on, but none of our lot got hit, and we didn't brew anything up. But Pat had me shooting. I couldn't see anything to aim at. All I could see were trees and shadows, but he with his binoculars, he could see things, and he was getting me onto targets, and I was shooting AP at things, but we didn't see any result from it.
Was it difficult, you know, did you have the engine on to clear the... Because I was thinking of this problem with the...
No, the engine was going. Normally...
You were still, but the engine was going.
Oh, normally you had the engine going all the time, even when you were still. And ready to move, or ready to get all keeping the batteries. And in the hot weather, of course, it kept us ventilated.
And would somebody help you with the loading, seeing as you were the loader?
I was the loader. No, I did all the loading, except... If we were on one occasion, we did a lot of shooting, and Pat Kettridge, Clifford Pember in the co-driver seat was handing ammunition through to me, because it was easier for him to get at it than me while I was loading.
So you were in action that night?
That evening we were shooting.
That would be the evening of the 27th, as far as I can see.
Yes, you're right, yeah. But it quietened down, and as it got darker it quietened down and the shooting stopped, and we just... move back into the next field behind us and leave it for the night.
So once again, would you have infantry in front of you again?
We couldn't see any infantry, and there weren't any infantry in the immediate vicinity now.
And by now you must have been getting short of ammunition. Did they come forward that night?
No, we weren't short. We hadn't fired that much, but they did. Some trucks did come up that night, yeah.
What would happen when the trucks came in? How, what was the procedure for...
Excuse me, I've got a bit of cramp there. They just start with your leaguered, and then you had to wait some time before the trucks came, and the wireless operator, and the squadron leader's wireless operator, would come round and give you the frequencies and codes for the next day if there was any change. And you'd hang about, and then the trucks would arrive, and it was all hands to the petrol then, because everybody had to go and get petrol cans off the petrol truck, and you'd hand them up to the driver, and the driver would be sitting on top of the tank with a funnel in his petrol tank, filling up from these cans that we'd carry up to him. And when that was done, then you'd see to ammunition if you needed any. And sometimes people needed repairs, and usually a fitter's truck came up, and you might need a repair, or the electrician might, or the wireless mechanic might have to do something to somebody's tank. And then when all that was done, you'd have blokes patrolling, guard patrolling, and you'd have guards in the turrets. This is assuming you were in La Liga.
So either be a guard from each tank, or
you'd have... One man was always, you always had to have one man in the turret looking out, and you'd have maybe a couple of blokes out of the squadron patrolling round just in case anybody was trying to sneak in.